the situation for me now is slightly different. So I'm not staying because it's my only option, because as I say, my children are independent now. Now I choose to stay. And I think I can make that choice now because I'm more informed about a neurodiverse relationship. So I'm making better choices for myself. So I can be happy as an individual and go back to the original me, pre-children and family life and all of that. And I think with the pressure being taken off from that point of view, there is more space in the marriage for happiness and joy and shared experiences.
Everyone, welcome to the Healing Cassandra podcast. I'm Margot Alexis. For today's show, I invited back Barb, Michelle, and Barbara. They were guests on our debut episode called The Long-Lived Neurodiverse Marriage. We had such a great response to that episode that I thought I would have them back. Today, we have a conversation where we talk about why we choose to stay in our marriage, contemplating leaving, and reconnecting with our passions and purpose. I really love these ladies. I really appreciate their willingness to have an honest and vulnerable conversation. They really go there, and I think you'll benefit from their insights and the things that they have to share. Let's get into it. Hello, ladies. Welcome back to the Healing Cassandra podcast. For our audience, I had the three of you on our debut podcast, so if you haven't listened to that, you might want to go back and listen to Barb, Michelle, and Barbara talking about the long-lived neurodiverse marriage. And after we did that podcast, it was really well received. We got a lot of good responses, but we also had some questions from the ladies. And one woman sent me an email and she said, I was wondering if you would do a podcast about the reasons women stay in a marriage with a neurodiverse partner. What is the payoff? What are the benefits of staying in a long-term marriage? Doesn't have to be all give and no receive. And then we also got some responses and some comments from women saying, yes, they're, you know, sharing all of this, but are they happy? So I thought today I would have the three of you back and we could have a discussion around some of these things that may be, you know, helpful to other women out there. And what we're going to share today, these are our experiences. Every marriage is unique. Each one of us are in different places in our marriage. And so, you know, during this conversation, Barbara and Michelle are gracious enough to share their experiences. And so we're looking forward to it. So welcome, ladies.
Hi, Margo.
Thank you.
Hi. Okay, great. So let's just get started with a reminder that we've all been in long-term marriages. And so I guess my first question would be to you is, what are the reasons that you decided to stay in your marriage? Barbara?
You know, my reasons, Margot, have changed over the years. Before I understood about neurodiversity, I would tell you that I stayed because, as unhappy as I was, I didn't want to leave because of the shame of what it would mean to get divorced. I didn't want to leave because of the drama, the effort it would take. I just decided it was easier to stay and be chronically discontent. But my reasons for staying now that I know more about neurodiverse marriages and more about my own marriage and my own partner is a little bit different. Some of that other is still true, but I'm staying because I see my marriage through a different lens today. I see it through this lens of neurodiversity. My chronic discontent has I would not say lifted 100%. I don't want anyone to think I'm happy, joyous, and free, skippy dippy every moment of every day, but it has lifted to a certain degree. And between my understanding by reading and learning and getting some couples counseling, I've been able to see things a little bit differently. And so now I have some hope. I mean, I'm not only staying because I can't do anything better than this. I'm staying because I actually see some hope for some happiness. So that was an awful long answer to your question, Margo, but that's where I am today anyway.
I know holding on to that hope really, I think, is the key. And for many years, I know, like for myself, I was in the dark. I didn't know I knew something was wrong with our relationship. But I made the commitment that I did not want my son to grow up in a broken home. And so I knew that it wasn't going to be a question for me, that I wanted to stay married until my son was up and out of college. And those were very difficult years. But that was a decision I made. My parents were married 71 years, and they had ups and downs, and they were in a neurotypical relationship. And I saw the struggles they went through, and, you know, they were together until their dying day. But I like what you said, that we see it through a different lens, and there's different chapters in our life. How about you, Michelle?
I think for me, pretty similar, really. When we got married, obviously, there was that particular mindset, and children arrived. And when I grasped the repetition of the difficulties, the children were there. So that became my main focus. And like yourself, Margot, for me, there was nothing more important than keeping the family together for my children. We had, at that stage, we'd immigrated. I'd unfortunately lost my mum, and the family support system was just myself, really, and my husband in this country. So that was the main reason, the children and the family support. And then, you know, similar to what Barbara said, the realization of going through the shame and the guilt, and rather take the burden and pretend for a while just to give your children the security of all the things that you would want as a parent. So those were definitely the reasons in the early years, and going through, both my children are at university now. So the situation for me now is slightly different. So I'm not staying because it's my only option, because, as I say, my children are independent now. Now I choose to stay. And I think I can make that choice now because I'm more informed about a neurodiverse relationship. So I'm making better choices for myself, so I can be happy as an individual and go back to the original me, pre children and family life and all of that. And I think with the pressure being taken off from that point of view, there is more space in the marriage for happiness and joy and shared experiences. But it is not the only thing I rely on to fulfill me as a person. And when it doesn't work, because of the skills that I've learned, I can step away and leave it alone. And I think with my husband seeing that I'm making other choices for myself, it's taken a lot of the pressure off. So that's for me now. I'm staying because I choose to stay. And I now know that when things are bad, it's not my fault. Sometimes it is, but not always as I used to think it was before. And I can separate me from the neurodiverse relationship and my husband, and I can make space for all of us. So yeah.
And Barb, you're in the thick of it. You have six children, and I remember, you know, when I was raising my son, that was a very difficult time in the marriage because it's all consuming. Do you want to share a little bit about your experience with raising six children and being right in the middle of it all?
Yeah, as I'm listening to you guys, I'm like taking little notes because, I'm very much in a different season. And I'm thinking, how can I explain where I've been, where I'm at without sounding too scattered? But then I realized, no, you know what? Welcome to my world, because, yeah, it's a little different. So I've been married 30 years and we have six kids. I think I've, over the years, you know, I went into marriage committed to staying married. There just was no question in my mind, you know, that I wouldn't. And so a lot of it over the years rode on just that. Similarly, like my expectation of myself, kind of the expectation of others too, right? As we're talking about, there's the stigma and there's a, you know, it affects so much, your family circles, social circles. So all of those. So I never really thought that I wouldn't stay. And then with six kids, yeah, we got busy with raising kids and it's been a great 26 years of that. I realized how much my kids were a buffer in my marriage. And that did help me, you know, so that gave staying power anyway. And right now I honestly am in a season where I'm not sure what, what we're doing. I know why I've stayed in the past. I feel like I'm kind of in a little holding zone and I'm doing a lot of watching. I'm watching, waiting. So it's only been, I don't know, 2.5 years since this idea of, you know, neurodiversity, like I'd never heard anything about it. I'd spent really all of our marriage trying to figure out what was I doing wrong. I always felt like I was doing something wrong and I would try harder and harder to fix things, you know, but so that's changed a lot of thinking too, obviously, and where I've kind of pulled myself back a little bit, which has been healthy for sure. But as many of us know, you know, I spent so many years compensating for so much and raising the kids and not really ever realizing that I was raising the kids by myself. But now to look back and the kids agree too. So that's kind of difficult to hear now and plays a big part into, yeah, why I'm in a little bit of a zone where I'm just not sure. I'm not sure what what exactly we're doing or where it's going, but anyway.
Yes, and I think a lot of women can relate to that, and I know I can relate to that, and I can say I've stayed married and some days I'm still not sure. I choose every day, and throughout this, you know, my marriage, it's taken on, you know, many different faces. I mean, we separated for a while. I also, you know, have the luxury of, I have another place that I can go to, a small condo where I work from, and it's my escape, because I know for me, one of the things is the stress builds up that I know I need to take care of myself and I know I need to take breaks. So that's the other thing, you know, because we stay in our marriage, it doesn't have to look any certain way. I've talked to women that they're still married and they live separately. And, you know, everybody has their own reasons. Everybody, you know, is different. But I really understand, Barb, what you're saying, like you're in a holding pad and you're thinking like, should I stay or should I go? And, you know, when I made that commitment to stay with, you know, my husband while raising my my son, don't get me wrong, I was waiting until he turned 18 and I was out of there. I mean, I was absolutely, I said, that's it, tick tock, you know, let the years go by. And I look back and I'm really happy that I stayed, and it was weighing the pros and cons. It's, you know, it's all choices. And for me, the pros of staying to give my son the kind of life that I wanted him to have, you know, outweighed what would happen with leaving. And like you, Michelle, I didn't have family around. So I would just be relying on, you know, my husband's family. So when there's not a huge support system, I think that weighs, you know, into the choices that we decide to make. But yes, I can agree what you're saying, Barb, that, you know, we do question, do I stay or do I go? And how about you, Barbara? Have you had those feelings?
Well, sure. And I just want to say, I'm glad you brought up this idea of there's no one right way to do this. There's no good way. There's no best way. You know, so often I like to know what are the best practices about some certain subject. And there isn't, I don't think in this case, it changes for all of us. And what might work for me doesn't work for someone else. So yeah, I would also make sure to say if I was experiencing abuse, there's no question that I would be leaving immediately. You know, safety first. What I did get confused about was emotional abuse. Physical abuse, I know what that looks like, and I would be gone no matter what it took. I would find a woman's shelter. I would be gone. But the emotional abuse was the piece I didn't understand, because sometimes I ascribed emotional abuse when it wasn't, you know, when it was really some neurodiverse stuff and I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to advocate for my own preferences. I would just, you know, shut down. And I don't mean to make it sound like it was horrible emotional abuse. He never, ever raised his voice. He never said anything ugly to me. But it was just that neglect, maybe. Maybe it was more about the emotional neglect. But when people are experiencing real live abuse, whether it's physical or emotional, that's a whole nother level. And I would encourage people to reach out and, you know, and get some help about that. We never want to encourage anybody to stay, you know, staying out of guilt and shame when there's abuse involved is a really dangerous situation.
I agree with you, Barbara. And that's why, you know, each woman has to take a look. And if they feel that they are in an abusive relationship, I mean, their physical definitely out. And it is tricky with, you know, the emotion, because sometimes it really does feel like emotional abuse. You know, my husband, their behaviors can be very blunt. They can be very uncaring, very neglectful. And it does feel like, you know, I'm being emotionally abused. But now, you know, that we know more, and I think education, and Michelle, you were bringing that up. Once we realize what's going on and the characteristics of the relationship and that, and making changes is helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it always felt uncomfortable to think of myself as being in an abusive relationship, an emotionally abusive relationship, because I've had moments where, because of the disconnect and the miscommunication, and my husband would often have meltdowns because he didn't understand how anxious he was. And I would come in being very stressed, and you know, then he would raise his voice, or he might say something that sounded nasty. Or so while that was happening, it was just him being mean, not understanding that this is part of the makeup of somebody that is that has got Asperger's or ASD1. And the more I understood, and he also, the more he understood, because we did do couples counseling. I did women's therapy as well with Mark Hutton. And obviously I continued to get together with you ladies and a couple of other groups. So educating myself and understanding what was going on, when I say over time, if I have to put a time on it, it's probably 12 to 18 months where I could actually start implementing the things I knew and had learned But getting my emotions in the right place to implement it was always my challenge. So having being able to implement those skills and my husband possibly stepping back before he responds is given the space that I referred to earlier, just to sometimes untangle things a bit. And it's not ideal. I sometimes have a time where I think, you know, this 2-week period and things are relatively normal and we're getting on well and there's good conversation, there's concern, there's compassion, there's, you know, all of the things that as women we want. And then something might, nothing in particular, something might just go a little bit awry, it might just digress a little bit. I don't now intervene and say, why did you do this? Or why? I just let it go. And because I'm now stepping back and almost observing, there's a period of 3 to 4 weeks where I just let it be. And then it'll come back and he'll be more receptive to interacting. And then that's fine. But in the meantime, I've got me that I'm investing in. So before I had nothing. I mean, like Bob was saying, you kind of hide behind the kids because you're so busy raising your children. You can be very busy that you don't have to give your marriage much time because it's such an unhappy environment. So you do ignore it for a very long time while you're raising your children. But I think because I'm less reactive, I'm getting more out of it.
Yeah. You know, for me, Michelle, I had a similar experience as Barb and you all with your children. It wasn't me raising children because I'm older and mine were grown and really gone before I got in this marriage, but mine was work. So I was away from home at work for at least 12 hours a day. And when I got home, it was dinner and it was bed. And, you know, that was about it. And so I was able to not take a look at what was going on, just sort of sweep it under the rug. It wasn't until I stopped working at that level and now I've dialed it back to where I'm only working part-time is when I finally began to say, this is not okay. What am I involved in here? What do I need to do about that? And that's when I stumbled across all these answers, like lots of you that are maybe listening or certainly with us here. I figured out what was going on and have now begun to learn some answers. You know, it started with understanding what I was dealing with. And I continue to learn more about that. And then it moved to another phase where I began to learn about techniques that are useful and that can help. And then I had to practice those techniques. You know, the head knowledge doesn't get me anywhere. I like head knowledge, but I really actually had to put it into action. And that was tough, but I find the more I practice, the better it is. Just even little things like, you know, when he walks in the door, I don't run right up to him and start trying to tell him about my day or what I'm thinking or what I want to know from him. You know, I know that I have to leave some space in there. That may not be true for everybody, but I've learned little techniques like that that really are helpful. You know, he's a real linear thinker. I can only approach one thing at a time with him. With you ladies, we can talk about 16 things at one time and we're all keeping up. That doesn't work with him. And so those are some of the changes that have helped me. I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but there you go.
No, that's great, Barbara. Now, Barbara, I want to get back to you because I know we have a lot of women in the audience that are like you, have children at home and are trying to, you know, manage, you know, having children and the marriage. And can you tell me a little bit how much has having support outside of the marriage been helpful to you?
Yeah, hugely helpful. And especially within these past couple years, you know, and meeting you guys within this group, because yeah, it was interesting. My second oldest son was talking to me the other day and it was almost like he was encouraging me to let other people outside of the family know what goes on at our house, you know, and with my husband. And anyway, I kind of looked at him and I didn't want to get defensive, but at the same time, I mean, I just started listing I have reached out to so many people over the years, family members, friends, church pastors, so many people. And really, it's just been a psychologist that I've met with, and then you guys here that just have saved me, especially in these last couple of years, you know. And then with COVID coming in too, and I think people's support systems that way, it really got complicated. Yeah, it was harder. I don't know, how do I describe this? I'm sure people can totally relate, but in the midst of raising kids, and we had more social connections in the way of school or sports or things that the kids were involved in. So then it kind of put everything to the side a little bit, like Michelle was saying too, we get distracted, you know. So that kind of felt like a support in a way, but it was more of a distraction than ever being able to tell somebody what was going on. I mean, it took me forever, like I said, to, you know, figure out what was going on. And then when a psychologist had mentioned, and he doesn't even specialize, you know, so much in ASD, but he just was curious at the thought of it because of things that I'd been telling him for a couple of years at that point. And then realizing how many of the traits were matching up. And so then to finally find a group that, you know, understood. You guys have been the first ones to understand. So, and then in all the years of feeling so crazy, this has just been so helpful. So
it is important, you know, having the right support. And Barb, I know that I've watched you grown over the year, and you're implementing new things, and I see you discovering new things about yourself. And I always say that, you know, once you shift the focus from your husband to yourself, whether you decide to stay or whether you decide to leave, that's important. You want to share some of the things and the ways that you've grown over the past year?
Yeah. Like I was saying before too, you know, I used to carry so much of everything, and in the midst of my kids being littler too, I mean, that all made sense. But I think one huge thing is taking a step back from that. And like you guys have been saying, you know, just creating your own space, your own self, you know, because we get so wrapped up in we're married, we have kids, and all those roles. And so I think it's been super healthy for me this last year to separate a little bit from that. It's complicated some days because my youngest is 10. So, you know, all my kids are old enough and in ways, but they've all been coping over the years too, in their own ways, at the lack of having that. So we have a lot of conversations. Those have been good. I'm getting off on another thing here, but anyway, we've grown in that too. So just a lot of stepping back and kind of observing what's going on.
And I know for you, you've reconnected with interests that are important to you and passion.
Yes,
you're piano playing. And I think that's really important, is finding, you know, a way to reconnect with things that bring meaning to your life.
Yeah. A year ago, I got involved in an online piano group and learning some jazz piano. And I'd been classically trained growing up, but this is a whole new extra added thing. And it's just been so much fun. So, I noticed it, maybe this is too much aside, but, my husband ordered a Christmas present, and I see that it's coming from Amazon, right? So he didn't really think through that end of stuff. But anyway, bless his heart for thinking that way. But I was almost surprised. It's like a little treble clef necklace. And I'm like, oh, he does notice that I play the piano, you know, hours a day. But because sometimes I wonder, you know. And then this is probably very too much information and won't show the best side of me. But my first thought then too was, how do you almost like, how do you have the right to get me a musical, you know, something that I would probably like in this necklace, when, and this just shows where we're at, but where it seems like he doesn't notice that I have this major, you know, interest and stuff. So, told you I was scattered.
That's okay. No, that's okay. And it's surprising. Yeah. And it is, you know, we expect them to be verbal in their support. And a lot of times they're not. Barbara, have you seen that before?
Yeah, when things like that, like Barb just described with the necklace, and they take you by such surprise, right? Mm-hmm. I was sick once, and very sick. And I got up in the middle of the night. I packed a bag to go to the hospital. I thought I was going to have to, you know, get to the hospital. And you know, it was like he didn't even notice. But if I sneeze in the middle of the night, he wakes up and it's like, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, I mean, like the littlest noise will wake him up. But now I'm going to die and go to the hospital, and he doesn't even notice, you know. But days later, he'll come up with something like, you know, he will come up with something, not a treble clef necklace, but, you know, something that big that, oh, he did notice. So all that stuff is processing in there. And the more I began to understand that, the less irritated, the less disappointed I became with things. That doesn't mean every day is perfect, but yeah, it's a really surprising phenomenon, isn't it? And it does, I will be honest, it does still take me by surprise when it happens. You know, I have expectations, and then he doesn't meet them, or he goes above and beyond. So I don't know. Sometimes it's a roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster, up and down. And, you know, you talk about expectations, and sometimes I look at my marriage, it's just about managing the marriage, you know, managing my expectations, the big one is managing the communication is huge. And that's become a lot better since, you know, I realized that we are a neurodiverse couple. And boy, that becomes enlightening. And that's the first step. And like you said at the beginning, Barbara, you know, there's different chapters. And now I look at my marriage through a different lens, because all those years when I didn't know, it was it was a totally different experience. So now that I do know, I can learn ways to, like you say, manage the expectations. And sometimes they will surprise you, and sometimes I'm disappointed, but I've put together a toolbox of skills to help with that. And the communication is still ongoing. It is a process and a practice, because, you know, it's speaking, as we all know, like speaking two different languages, and some conversations will go well that I think would be very difficult. And then the simplest conversations can just, you know, go off course, and we'll spend an hour on a topic that I know if I talk to you, to any of you ladies about, it would be, you know, a 5-minute conversation. So I think communication is, you know, still a challenge.
Yes. And to come back to, you know, my interest in getting back into learning piano and things, also in that, in my observing period of time right now, and watching and waiting and, you know, wondering what I'm going to do in the future, I am using some of that and thinking, well, what if that turns into a job, because I would need that, you know? And so I think that's a, you know, something that we can do that's important, is, you know, finding what is our interest, or what are we good at? Because, you know, there's probably several of us who might be stay-at-home moms, and yeah, the situation of, we would probably need a job someday. So anyway, so that's kind of been in my thinking too. How can I use this then? So
Michelle? Yeah, I was just gonna say that's a brilliant point, Barb. I also am more thinking along those lines now, but I worked part-time, and we've recently moved to a different area. So I've given all of that up and found some interests and hobbies. And one of those is something that I'm exploring exactly in the same way. How can this interest, this passion of mine, earn an income. I'm looking at it through that lens. I needed to do it, particularly with lockdown and when we were stuck inside. And for me, that particular hobby was my therapy. And then I found I really enjoyed something. And just enjoying something was not something that I was able to do during the troubled years, the more troubled years, because you were so busy surviving, you didn't get pleasure from anything. So the fact that this is something I'm enjoying, but I know that I also want to extend it, because at the moment I work from home with a couple of things I do. So I'm also looking at how can I invest in a more secure financial situation for myself. I mean, Andrew takes care of us well enough, and for today, everything is fine. But I also know that in the past, one day can be fine, and the next day, things can be completely different. So I pretty much work on a 24-hour cycle now. So it makes sense to me that I've got to look to my future and take care of my financial situation. So to extend a hobby into perhaps a little bit of pocket money is a really good point, Bob.
Exactly. And Barbara, you talk about that too, how important it is to look after our financial health. And like Michelle said, though, sometimes it's difficult when you're in the troubled years and you're raising kids and you're just, I remember those years just in survival mode and just trying to get through, you know, every day and making sure everything's taken care of. It's difficult, but I do think it's important that women look after their financial health.
Yeah. And even if you can't do anything about it today, even if, you know, you're in the midst of the child raising years and you don't feel like you can go out and get a job, you know, tomorrow, thinking about it, planning about it, looking at it, investigating it, and giving yourself the freedom to think, I can do this. I know there were times for me and people that I know that they just didn't think they could do it. They couldn't imagine themselves back out into the bigger world of work. It just seemed overwhelming. And I've worked with lots of women through that process. And what happens, I've seen this over and over again, is when women get back into the workforce, on the day before they go back into the workforce, they're very concerned that maybe they can't possibly do this. It seems overwhelming. And then at the end of day one, the end of day two, they report back to me and say, oh my gosh, I can too do this. I got this. And it doesn't take a week and it doesn't take a month. It's a day or two and they figure out how to do it. And so I would say to people that are on the cusp, and some of the people that might be listening might be on the cusp, if it's time to do something outside of the home, you can do it. If all these other women can do it, you can do it too.
And now there's options with businesses that you can do from home. There's so many more. I know from the time when I was raising my son, there weren't so many online options to, you know, to be able to still be home, and that has increased. But, you know, I also know our confidence tends to, you know, wane. We start to lose our identity. And I think it's looking for small wins. Like Barb, I've really seen that with you, and that you've really put concentrated effort, you know, especially with your piano, like joining the piano group and just taking those little steps that start to build your confidence. And Barb has done that. And now you're going to be playing your first paid gig at a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's tips only. Did I tell you that? So
that's okay. They're going to tip you a lot. So that's still income. But so that's great.
The experience will be good. So
it will be excellent. All right. I want to talk about this happiness business, because, you know, women have said, but are they happy? And I don't know. I guess for me, as happiness as the be all and end all for me, happiness seems to deal with the present. It's a state of being. It can be fleeting. I think what shift for me is looking for a meaningful life, finding purpose and meaning, being engaged, being connected to my creativity, being surrounded by good friends and having support. And, you know, my marriage is there, but it's not my whole focus. And I don't look to my husband to provide happiness for me. If I'm have meaning, and like for me, starting Healing Cassandra and being of service is very important to me. And I get so much out of working, you know, with you ladies, and it provides meaning to me. And out of that meaning comes happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I definitely would agree. I think now I know what happiness feels like. I mean, for so long, we were kind of in the zone where we didn't really identify with it, and it was a foreign entity. But now that, you know, we've done work and we're in the place where we are and we've made the choices that we have, I know what it feels like to be happy. And I'm not happy all of the time, not in any way, shape, or form. You know, I might have a couple of weeks and something goes a little bit, you know, off the beaten track. And but I now know how to pull it back. So for me, I use happiness as a guide. So when I'm not feeling that, then I have to check in with myself. What can I do here? What am I going to do there? Am I just going to let it be? Am I going to just sit back and be an observer for now? Because I'm just depleted of any energy to make any effort. And all of those things are okay. So I would say that I'm in a happier place. But like Margot said, it's something that I don't take for granted, and I rely on it on a 24-hour cycle. I don't think that it's I can check that box off and it's all good for forever. But yeah, more a guide, so that if I'm not feeling happy, then I can check in and ask myself what's going on, and I can put some things in place, and things are okay again.
I want to comment, because you said it a couple of times, Michelle, a 24-hour cycle. And I think that's really important, that you look at 24 hours at a time. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think before I was very much a kind of person where I need to know what's happening. My security is really important to me. I need to know where I'm going, and, you know, all these pressures, and they haven't gone away, but they are not a priority for me. So I have so many times, particularly in my marriage, been in a situation where things are okay, and within 24 hours they are not, and everything is just turned upside down. So I just feel now, if I have a bad day, go to bed, wake up in the morning, checking on myself, am I feeling okay? Have I learned anything? Can I do something differently? Do I need to use one of the skills or apply it? Do I need to do nothing? And then that's what I do for that 24 hours. And sometimes doing something or doing nothing takes care of the 24 hours, and then I can deal with the next day. So, I mean, I don't do 24 hours in the way of life and, you know, planning for my, but just in the way of my well-being, I think, maybe emotional and mental well-being. I kind of use a 24-hour cycle. Yeah.
Great. Barbara, I wanted to ask you, you know, our viewer asked the question, does it have to be all give and no receive?
That's a great question. Because aren't there those days that it just feels like it's all give, 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 give? And that's certainly the way I felt before I knew a lot about neurodiversity. And some days it still feels that way sometimes. Why do I have to be the one to communicate carefully? You know, why do I have to be the one to think ahead? You know, why do I have to be, you know, it's that piece. But what I'm learning through meeting with you all, and, you know, couples counseling and reading and watching videos, is I really can receive, but they're two pieces. One, I have to be willing to receive, because sometimes I put up those walls and those barriers, right? Mm-hmm. But that irritability and that discontent gets up there. And yeah, how dare you give me a treble clef necklace? Yeah, you know. I get that. So it's such a great example, Barb. I so get that. But I can receive today because I can ask for what I want. I've been given a voice finally. I just didn't have a voice for so long. Now, in my regular life, by the way, I'm very strong. I had a big girl job. I advocated for all kind of funding. I managed lots of people and spaces. But in my own marriage, I became very, very quiet, very silent. And so now what I can do is I can say, in the future, I'd prefer blah, blah, blah. I've learned to say, when you blah, 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 I feel blah, blah, blah. You know, I've learned all those. And not only do I know them intellectually, but I'm using them. And using them got scary because I was afraid of what the outcome would be. Like, well, this is going to be another argument. I was also afraid of saying what I wanted, because if I say what I want and then I get it, I need to be happy with it. That's a lot of responsibility for one human who's used to being discontent and pointing fingers, you know? And so, yeah. So does it have to be all give and no receive? I do not believe that, but I do believe that there are pieces to this that I do maybe give a little bit more. I do have to think about around things. I do have to adjust my behavior a little bit more, but that doesn't mean I can't ask for what I want. My husband and I are at the point where I can say, or I can grab his hand and hold his hand, or I can say, you know, when you get home tonight, would you have 15 minutes to talk about blah, 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 you know, and I wouldn't do that before. I'd just pout because he didn't want to talk. So I don't know if that quite answered your question, Margo, but that's where I am with it right now.
No, it did answer the question. And I think, you know, that's the thing. We have to learn to ask for what we want. And we get into that cycle sometimes. I know I have, where it's, you know, you feel like you're the one giving all the time. And then when they do give you a little bit, you're resentful because where were you all the other times, you know? Right. So, and then that's a vicious cycle for us. And we tend to then just hold on to our discontent. So, you know, for me, I know that it's not, you know, I do give a lot, and women tend in these kind of relationships tend to give the most. We are the givers, but I think I know when I look at myself and other relationships, I tend to have a hard time receiving in any relationship. So sometimes I think about, okay, did I, you know, pick this kind of husband because that fulfilled that, you know? So what is my role in this? Because I look back at other relationships with, you know, parents and that, you know, and it was just learned behavior. So sometimes we have to take responsibility and really take a look at that. So I guess my answer for me is no, it's, we can learn to receive, and it's definitely doable. How about you, Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, I was just listening to you ladies talking now, and I think I've adopted a behavior of quiet, which gives me content in some form. So if there's, I've got a situation where there's a range of things, of problems that have happened always, and they will always happen because that's how my husband thinks. That's how he does things. He doesn't think he's doing anything wrong, but for me, it's a problem. So if one of these issues come up, and it's a similar one from the past, I would, in the past, react. Now, I will just sit back and just listen to whatever's happened, or I won't say very much about what has happened. The difference between now and 6 months to a year ago is that when I was quiet with resentment. Now I'm quiet and just content because it's your choice. I'm not bothered. If you want to be doing that, it will cause an issue if I express what I'm thinking, but I'm not bothered to do that because it's not going to take me anywhere. So I'm just going to get through my little 24 hours and tomorrow morning I will deal with whatever. And strange thing has happened where we were talking earlier about how we're not aware of how much is actually taken in by our husbands, and because they don't always express, but they take in a lot of things that we're not aware of. At some level, the things that he's taken on board is that if I'm quiet about something that he's well aware of is an issue, he won't respond to it, but the following day he will try and make it right. And there's some kind of reassurance for me because I'm in a process of trying to build up my self-esteem as well. You know, we've been together for 26 years and 27 years and married for 25. So, you know, there's some sort of damage control that I'm doing on the sidelines as well. And just knowing that I have got the choice to not have that resentment and to be quiet and have the content. And then the next day I might be talking to you girls, or, you know, I might decide to do something else to make myself feel good for that day. Then that issue with him is secondary. But for him, it's kind of risen to the top of his pile because I won't initiate anything. I'm quite happy to be quiet in my own company. And it's actually interesting to observe how the little patterns of behaviors could change. So that's kind of how things are playing out for me at the moment.
That's great, Michelle. And you made reference to it. And it's something that we've been talking about and I've been practicing, is being the observer, you know, being outside. You know, I tend to just pause and look at a situation and look at it as the observer rather than from all the emotion and being in my history and my wounded child and all of that, just kind of putting that aside and say, okay, I'm going to be observing this just like I'm watching a film or a TV program, and just being the observer. And when you can be the observer and you remove all those emotions and resentments and that, it becomes a different situation. There is more peace. And when I'm the observer, I can also find more of the humor in things. And that's where I see Barb. You are so good at finding the humor in situations. Brilliant. You always make me laugh with that. It's brilliant.
Well, that's good.
You always give us a laugh.
Yeah. Well, as you guys are talking too, totally agree with just all that. And in my better moments, there's sometimes where I, you know, I'm sure we all do this, but we're back and forth between our immature selves and our better selves. But in my better moments, I have been learning to let things be, you know, like awkward or something. There's a lot of interactions or we might be out somewhere, or even my husband's interactions with the kids, or where I used to rush in and fix everything. And now, yeah, just that observing, that sit back and try to just think to myself, well, that's interesting. And also reminding myself, don't be surprised by things anymore, right? Like, there's things that go on, and some days I'm not in a good frame of mind and I'm all shocked and I'm, you know, totally irritated and frustrated and put out. That it's like, well, that's just more of what he does, you know, which then gives me, yeah, I have to write myself a little note, I think, still, and probably not stick it on the refrigerator for him to see, but, you know, to remind me that he comes with a very different mindset on things. Yeah. And I really don't think a lot of his quirky or even, you know, offensive things sometimes, or hurtful things are intended. So, but anyway, and then going back to what you were saying, Barbara, about you know, we have a voice and listening to, it's like, I love our meetings because I leave them and I'm a better version of me. So it's like, that's right. Barbara reminded me, I have a voice. Because I don't always use that, you know, I may be plenty bold with everybody except my husband, but things change when I'm in that environment. So I was listening to a YouTube video yesterday that was what you were saying too, Margo, about finding, you know, where's our responsibility in things. And when we, you know, it's kind of a scary thought at first, because we a lot of times probably feel like there's more excessive responsibility put on us, you know, in our marriages and raising kids and whatever our situation. But when we stop and think, okay, no, I am a responsible adult. I would like to be, you know, I said before that, you know, what would an adult do in this situation? Or I've heard it said, what would a confident person, how would they react to this? So I think keeping that in mind, you know, what can I do here and what can I be responsible for? And then it gives you this extra boost of strength, I think, to realize I have the choice here. You know, we often talk about too, like doing the next right thing. And there's some days where I'm like, I am so tired of choosing the next right thing. Like, just give me a break. But I think that is helpful. And yeah. And again, like, I was also reminded, you know, so many times we'll feel alone in our situations, but to find a group of, you know, just a few like-minded friends, I just think gives you all that much more strength too. So,
yes, Barbara, and that's one reason why I felt moved to start Healing Cassandra. And, you know, beginning the first of the year, I'm going to have a membership community. And one of the goals in that community is that, not only do we come together and build a community as a whole, but we meet other women. And I know you've referenced it, you know, just to let our audience know, the four of us have been meeting faithfully every Friday we meet. And I think maybe we missed one time, but it's been over a year now that we meet every Friday. And I look forward to it. It's a time to, you know, reflect on what's going on. I just know that you ladies get it. I don't have to explain anything. And like you say, when I leave after talking to you, I just feel, you know, more confident. And that's one thing that I want to do with Healing Cassandra is for women to, not only for us to come together as a group in a community, but find, we can call them wellness buddies or groups of you know, like for us, it's four, I would say no more than six, but four works out nicely. And where you have that constant support, where it's continuous, yes, where, you know, and many times we've said, you know, when one of us are going through a difficult time, can anyone jump on a call, you know, and yes, that's so helpful. So, I mean, having the support, I think, has really helped me, you know, stay in the marriage. And if you notice in this whole hour, we've talked kind of very little about our husbands, you know, and that, and mostly, you know, about you know, what we're doing. So, you know, as we move forward, that is one of my goals, because I've seen just the most, I work with you ladies and I work with another group on Wednesdays, and it's just so wonderful to see women that grow, and from one week to the next, you see, you know, the heaviness, and then the next week they'll implement something that we've talked about, and they come back and the lightness and the confidence, like, you know, Barb, we've been rooting you on with playing your, you know, piano, and finally, you know, when you got a gig, who cares, it's for tips only, that's huge for you to be in public and that, and you know, Michelle with your, you know, your crafting, and Barbara with your solo trips and gardening, and you know, we all have those things that I think are so important, and it takes support from like-minded women that get it, you know, and we don't get that a lot of times from our other, you know, people in our lives. They just don't understand. All right. So final question is, So what are the benefits? What have been the benefits of being in a long-term marriage?
I think for me, I've in a strange way have been able to stay true to myself, because I started out as a person who is very loyal, very committed. Family is very important to me. I didn't anticipate the amount of potholes and bumps along the way. But I'm not happy those things happened, but I'm glad that I stayed, because that's who I am. I will go through all the tough times and I will be there at the end. And I've managed to keep that part of me, and I'm turning it around into something positive. I'm finding out who I am, things I enjoy. I'm identifying my happiness. So the benefit for me is that I've got a second chance of being me again.
Excellent. How about you, Barbara?
Well, it's funny. I think I may have started out the opposite of Michelle, because if life got uncomfortable, I'm a runner, and I've been married a couple times before because of that. You know, if the marriage wasn't going well, I just said adios and I'm out of here. And so the benefit for me staying in this now long-term marriage is that I get to grow. I've learned how to not be a runner. I've learned how to not escape when things got uncomfortable. I didn't know that I could walk through discomfort. I didn't know that if I used, just walked through it today, that tomorrow might be better, because I never hung around long enough for tomorrow to be better. You know, I didn't stay in jobs all that long. I didn't stay in marriages that long. I didn't stay in houses that long. And today that has all changed for me. So I would say that a benefit for me of staying in this, while there certainly have been problems, one of the benefits I've gotten out of this neurodiverse marriage is learning how to sit with discomfort, walk through discomfort in a healthy sort of way, and see the world through a different lens.
Excellent. And Barb, I'll give you the final word.
Uh-oh.
No pressure.
Triple C to those guys like that. That's deep. Those are good. Those are good things. Honestly, today and where I'm at, coming back to that realization, I have a house and I have a house and car and I have financial stability. So as not deep as that sounds, that is where I'm at. That is my benefit right now. I have my kids. So I super appreciate my husband's commitment to his job. He's been at the same job for a lot of years, lots and lots of years. And he keeps doing that. So, and I need to tell him that more. I try to keep on that word of thanks to him. But yeah, that's all I come up with today.
I know, but Barb, I don't think that's something to be taken lightly, because I can relate to that, you know, one of the things that when I stayed, the fact that, you know, my husband had a good job and he, you know, was very loyal and committed and provided us a good life. That gave me the freedom then to raise my child the way that I wanted to and be able to spend summers. There was a lot of things that came out of that. So for me, for staying, that was a big benefit, that was a pro, that I didn't have to, I'm just speaking for me, if I decided to leave, what would that look like without support? Then I would have to be working a full-time job and my son would have to be in daycare during the summer. And, you know, there's just pros and cons and we all have to make our own decisions, but I don't think that's something to take lightly. Yes, that you have a nice house, you have your husband, you know, works and provides, and that frees you up to be the best mom that you can, to spend time with your children. And those are huge benefits. I don't think that's to be underestimated. Well, thank you, ladies. This was a wonderful hour, and I appreciate all of you. And I know our viewers will glean some great things from this, and will have answered some of their questions. I mean, we can talk on and on. This is very complex, these relationships, but I always enjoy my time with you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Margo.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. That was a great hour. I hope you found some inspiration and some great takeaways. If you want to receive more information on Healing Cassandra, head over to our website and subscribe to our mailing list. This will keep you updated on future events, especially our membership community that's going to be coming the first of the year. See you all next time, and remember, be kind to yourself.